The scripture reading is just one verse. You know it very well. You don't have to look it up. Randa will put it on the wall. So if you will stand because of the Holy Scriptures, I will read it to you. It's Deuteronomy chapter 17, verse 15. Thou shalt surely set him king over thee, whom the Lord thy God shall choose. One from among thy brethren who shall thou set king over thee. Thou mayest not set a stranger, that word is foreigner, which is a non-Israelite, over thee, who is not thy brother. You may be seated. There's something in this verse that's usually not talked about. What does this verse say? Who chooses the king over the Israel people? God does. It doesn't say the people choose. It says God chooses. Well, the title of this sermon is Apartheid America. I will spend a few minutes before I begin my sermon on the 9/11 hoax. I just don't want this hoax to get away from us, as the hoax has been used to literally change the world. The official story goes like this. Terrorists, while living in deep caves with laptops and satellite phones, penetrated the most heavily defended airspace in the world. Flying wildly off course for over an hour, hitting 75% of their targets, and not a single fighter was scrambled to intercept. They were led by Osama bin Laden, who was a leader who had liver problems and required dialysis twice a week, who was living in caves and dwellings in Afghanistan and Pakistan. He lived until he was assassinated after 10 years. NORAD and all military agencies and all government assistance and defense non-existence until well after the attacks had taken place. Oh, sorry, victim families and fellow citizens. We failed to mention, we forgot to mention, World Tower Center number 7 in the official report. Well, all right, now we'll put up the next one. Up on the wall will be the 19, there's another slide here, the 19 accused Arab terrorists who were the people who the FBI said died in the 4 hijacked airplanes. These were the hijackers. And none of the 19 men were either from the country of Iraq or Afghanistan. But that's not the real issue. What's the real issue of these 19 men? Well, 9 of them were alive. This is the airline's number 11, Boeing 767, that departed Boston for Los Angeles, crashed in the North Tower. The second, third, fourth, and fifth person all were alive. This person called his dad and said, I'm alive over here. they all testified they were alive. That means that the flight number 11 that supposedly crashed in the North Tower had how many hijackers on it? One, the first guy. The second one was flight 77. The first guy was alive. The fourth guy was alive. So 3 out of the 5 were hijackers. The next slide, we've got the first person alive. So it looks like 4 out of 5 were alive. And the one that crashed in the Stony Creek Township, that's the one in Pennsylvania. The first was alive, the third was alive. So 2 out of 4 turned up alive. What an absolutely fantastic lie. The FBI put this out and said, these are the guys who hijacked the plane. And 9 people stand up and said they're alive. What? If you're a lawyer in the case, wouldn't that just destroy your case? They get away with it. And don't forget the building set. Well, we'll show the next slide. The next slide shows you what happened. Two of them left Boston. Now, the red one went down and hit one tower. And the second one came and hit the second tower. One left New York and crashed in Pennsylvania. One left Dulles in Washington, D.C. and crashed into the Pentagon, as the official story goes. It's nothing but a big hoax. They have lied to us. It's like when Jesse Ventura said, when he found out, a guy came to his campus and said the Gulf of Tonkin was a big lie. It didn't happen. And he got irate because he said 58,000 of my generation died over there. He fought over there. Because why? The Gulf of Tonkin. It got people all riled up and they had the war. Well, that's the phony story. And don't forget Building 7 that the 9/11 Commission forgot to mention. Building 7 is 47 stories tall. It collapsed at about 5:30 the same day the two towers collapsed. How fast did that 47-story tall building come crashing down? How fast did it crash? Less than 7 seconds, about 6.6 seconds it crashed. If you took a ball and dropped it from the top of it, it's the same amount of time it would hit. There's no resistance. There are, at last count, 1,200 architects and engineers who have stated that could not happen. There had to be a demolition. If it's a demolition, you have to spend a couple weeks putting all the explosives in there. And I don't see how the Arabs with a guy in a cave is going to pull all that off. What story do you believe? Do you believe the official story the government is telling you? Or do you believe what I'm saying? Or do you believe something else? You see, the same thing is true in religion. Do you know what church is telling you the truth? Because I can show you one church says one thing, the other church says the opposite thing. What church is lying to you? Does it make any difference to you? Does it make any difference if you celebrated Christ's Mass, for example? Does it make any difference what you believe about the word Gentile? Does that mean all the non-Jews? Or does that mean the house of Israel? It really comes down to who or what you believe. If you search for truth, we're living in an age where you will get to be less and less people who will be following. Now we go back to the first transparency, if you don't mind. So this sermon, I'm going to tell you the way American was. I don't think it can be argued. This is the way it was. It all comes down to what you believe. The American way of life under first the Articles of Confederation. I have not seen a copy of the Articles of Confederation. If anyone has, like, show me where I can find it. I'd like to see it. The American way of life under the Articles of Confederation, later the Constitution, during America's first 93 years of existence, had laws and traditions that in today's liberal culture, we're living in a liberal culture, seem to be very strange. In fact, most present-day Americans would be totally repulsed to live in such a politically incorrect society. Think that's true? I think so. But it was a Christian-based society. If today's Christians lived in those beginning days, they would feel very comfortable about how things were if they lived in those days. But now they would think it very strange, because that is not as it is now. It is now just the opposite of what it was back then. What would you think about a nation in which only white men over 21 years old, but not all white men, they had to be what? Landowners, and they had to pay taxes. Those were the only ones who were allowed to vote. They were the only ones who were allowed to hold office. They were the only ones who were allowed to be on the jury. And they were the only ones allowed in the militia. Only white men over 21 years old. Some political offices, like the president, had to be filled by a white man who was over the age of 35. And the same is true with senators and representatives and other offices. But it was still true that no women of any race could vote or hold office until there was what? A feminist movement, which resulted eventually in a constitutional amendment that was passed in what year? 1920, almost 100 years ago. And no non-whites could vote. That means no blacks, no Mexicans, no Asians, no Filipinos, no mulattoes, no Native Americans, and no atheistic white could vote, hold office, be on a jury, or be in the militia until after the war between the states had been concluded. So our next transparency. Oh, you got it up there? Yes. So the United States of America had this voting law. Number one, no one except white men could vote and hold office for the first 93 years of this nation's existence. From 1776 to 1869, only white men could vote. Then second, then certain blacks could vote after 1869, and they have voted for 145 years. Three, Asian Pacific Americans were considered, quote, aliens ineligible for citizenship, unquote, since 1790, and did not vote in large numbers until after 1965, which was 49 years ago. Number four, 94 years ago, the women of all races began to vote. Only 90, that's about as long as when all the white men voted, 93 years. What a difference this law would have made in the last two presidential elections if the laws of the nation had not changed from its first 93 years of existence. Why, women of all races supported Obama with a high voting percentage. But Barack Obama would not have been the winner anyway. Why? Well, he wouldn't have been allowed to run. He would first have to produce a valid birth certificate. But then he wouldn't be allowed to hold the office of a senator or a president, for Barack Obama is a mulatto, a child of both a white and a black parent. And he wasn't a natural-born citizen either. Both Mitt Romney and Obama couldn't vie for the coveted office, as they were both disqualified from holding the office of the President of the United States. They both were not born in the territory of America, and thereby could not run for the president. And I gave sermons on that. And also John McCain, he also was not a natural-born citizen, so he wasn't qualified under the United States Constitution to be a president either. So both the Republican and the Democratic parties have not had a qualified candidate for president in the last two elections. Let's see, with over 300 million people to choose from, neither political party could find a person qualified to be president. What an absolute disgrace. Well, we talked about the president. Who could be a juror? Only certain citizens. Christian, white men were allowed to be on the jury. There was one exception. Before the war between the states, only one state, that was the state of Massachusetts, allowed non-whites to be part of the jury system. No women were allowed to be on the jury until after 1865. No non-white men were allowed. That means no blacks, no Mexicans, no Asians, no Filipinos, no Native Americans, no atheistic whites, no mulattoes, and so forth, were allowed to be on the jury. Judges. Well, we got a case in Cincinnati. They're after that judge. But she could be on the judge in the first 93 years of our nation's history. Judges had to be first Christian, and they had to be white men. For what law were they judging? They were judging some, not all, some of God's laws. And there was a need to know and understand it. But what happened later? Later, Jewish Kabbalah philosophy. What's that a code word for? Jewish Kabbalah philosophy, disguised as the science of psychology, came into being. When did it come into being? When did psychology come into being? The late 1800s. This false tenet became very popular very quickly. What does psychology teach? It teaches a person how he could live his life without God. It has crept into every area of American society, including almost every church. These unbiblical psychological courses are now taught in almost all so-called Christian schools and universities, as well as preached from many of its pulpits. How about the Supreme Court? It's the third branch of American government. It's part of the checks and balances that was derived from the Constitutional Convention. This is the last place you can take a case and get a final decision. Originally, it was composed of all white Christian men, all Protestants. After all, we were a Protestant nation. But now we have five Caucasians, two Jews, one Puerto Rican, and one black. That is six Roman Catholics, three Jews, and no Protestants. The United States began as a Protestant nation. And now we have lost the highest court of the land into the hands, not just to other people, but our enemies. White men were the ones who ran most companies and corporations after attending post-high school teachings in a college or universities. There were very few white women who were there, except in the colleges of education and nursing. It was expected that the white women would be the ones whose job it was to give birth to children and to biblically do what? Guide the home and help rear the children. There were very few non-whites in institutions of higher learning. Whites had their businesses and blacks had their businesses. They were basically living separate lives. The immigration of the United States drastically changed. It started out being mostly Christian white men and white women and their white children coming from Europe to a very different third world, non-Christian, uneducated strangers in the last century and a half. Roman Catholic and Jews, what were they thought to be by the Protestants? Roman Catholic and Jews were thought to be Antichrist. were forbidden to vote and hold office in most of the non-Catholic colonies, but were allowed to do both on the federal level, according to the Constitution. This was because this was a Protestant nation. And most of the inhabitants of the land remember the times of persecution suffered at the hand of the Roman Catholic Church. And England had kicked the Jews out of the country for 350 years. And many of them read that the many Bible verses that taught them to beware of those people who did what? Who hated Jesus Christ and hated them. But our Constitution gave the people, our first settlers from fleeing in Europe, the opportunity that they could openly rejoice over. Now I'm going to give you a quote from the Vice President of the United States. He said this recently. That's the next slide, I believe, in the late 1800s. In the late 1800s, there was a large majority of both of these two groups of religious people, I'm talking about Roman Catholics and Jews, who immigrated to the United States. The Roman Catholics soon became a major influence in America, as well as the Ashkenazic Sephardic Jew, who has influenced a change to the worse. You say worse? I'd say worse. For Americans' Protestant culture. Now we're going to read what Vice President Joe Biden offered praise for the Jewish community that raised some eyebrows and seems to have delighted anti-Semitic conspiracy theorists. See, they put anti-Semitic in there. It's not anti-Semitic. They're not Semitic except for a few Sephardic Jews. This was at the Democratic National Convention event for Jewish American Heritage Month, which was last month. After noting Jewish Americans disproportionate representatives in Congress. There's more Jews in Congress than they are in the population. I think it's 11%. Their impressive share of Nobel Prizes and their role in what? Civil rights and women's rights. Oh, you know the leader of the women's rights movement. Biden then praised their work on behalf of gay marriages via control of the media. Here's what he said. Here's the quote from President Biden. Quote, I believe what affects the movements in America, what affects our attitudes in America, are as much the culture and the arts as anything else, he explained. Think beyond of all that. I bet you 85% of those changes, whether it's in Hollywood or social media, are a consequence of Jewish leaders in the industry. That's the Vice President of the United States said it. Vice President Biden also cited one of his favorite explanations for the success of gay marriage. Quote, it wasn't anything we legislatively did. It was will and grace. Now, what's will and grace? That was a TV show, right? They put a gay person on there. It was the social media, literally. That's what changed people's attitudes. That's why I was so certain that the vast majority of people would embrace and rapidly embrace the measure. That's what Joe Biden said. He finishes up by saying, in these developments, Biden explained, quote, the influence of Jewish people is immense. The influence is immense, unquote. Well, that's a pretty good quote, isn't it, for the Vice President of the United States? They both, Roman Catholic and Jewish, have put Protestant America in a very bad position. In regards to what? Serving their God. The original Protestant America has traded their holy days for their holidays. The original Protestants didn't celebrate the Mass of Christ. They hated the Mass. They traded their gospel for the message of a false hope. They have traded their modest apparel for the modern short skirts and low-cut blouses. Did you ever see a picture of your grandmother at the swimming pool? They have traded their traditional marriages for the concept of same-sex marriages. And the same is true in feminism, birth control, aborticide, Sabbath keeping, the change in popular music, drug culture, sodomy, bank usury, miscegenation, change in immigration, and you go on and on. Now we have so many third world people immigrating, both legally and illegally, to the United States that the Caucasian race has lost its majority in two states already. That's New Mexico and California. By the year 2025, that's 11 years from now, it is projected that the United States will no longer be inhabited by a majority of the white race. 11 years. It will be a brown America. 11 years. Most of us could be alive when that happens. Interracial marriage was illegal and unlawful in the nation, and it was considered to be such a horrible sin that it was forbidden by all the states, the nation, and the churches. The penalty for those who were guilty of interracial marriage was either jail time or execution. The Bible has a partially different punishment for the crime, but it refers to it as being an abomination to God. Approval of interracial marriages among non-Christians in America began when what happened in the late 1800s? Marriage license. Most of the partners of mixed marriages were married by a justice of the peace rather than a Christian church clergy. Why? The vast majority of churches did not marry racially mixed couples. But today, the church has changed from being, quote, the most segregated place in America on Sunday morning, unquote, to an integrated, apostate church that will marry just about anybody, except if you want to marry someone of our belief. They even marry sodomites. Why? Most of the clergy, a lot of the clergy, are now sodomites themselves. And we had the story about the Methodist minister who married his son who was a sodomite. Many states had laws against interracial marriages until who ruled against them? Supreme Court. What year? 1967. Well, most of us were alive in 67. It ruled that interracial marriages were now unconstitutional. Let's see. So for 178 years of our nation being under the American Constitution, it was constitutional. But for the last 47 years, it has been considered unconstitutional. how non-essential can you get? For Christians, it's even a bigger issue. Is race mixing a sin? Is miscegenation an abomination against our God? For the majority of time of our nation, the church has said that it was a sin and that God hated it. The rules are now turned around. Evil for good. There's a scripture about that, isn't it? And race mixing isn't the only change. It happened with feminism. It happened with birth control. It happened with aborticide. It happened with same-sex marriages. It happened with sodomy. It happened with bank usury. It happened with Sabbath keeping. And on it goes. Many that the church taught were sins, there now is agreement or toleration with these sins. We had the Baptist, Methodist, Lutherans, Quakers, Presbyterians, Anglicans, Episcopalians, Unitarians, and Congregation were some of the major denominations in America in the beginning. Almost all of these were all white churches, with eventually all black churches existed independently. The black churches would usually be pastored by a white man until the church would call a qualified black man to be their pastor, and then the white pastor would leave. There were also a large number of Mennonites and Amish who came to this country. They started in the 1600s, but they came in big numbers in the 1700s and 1800s. They were true Christians who refused to trade the new inventions which would make their lives more convenient for a few of Satan's wiles. Many followed a man who was a former Roman Catholic priest who had never read his Bible. His name is Menno Simons. He had never read his Bible. When he began to read it, he's a Roman Catholic priest. When he began to read it, he was shocked at the things that he found out. He soon discovered the Roman Catholic Church was the Antichrist Church. He quit the church as a priest and became the leader of the Mennonites. They were an all-white church that came from Europe. But then there were the new Restoration churches that sprang into being in the 1800s. The Christian Church, Church of Christ, Disciples Church, Church of Latter-day Saints, which is the Mormons, Jehovah Witnesses, and so forth, were a few of the Restoration churches. Those were churches who said, all the churches are wrong. I talk to God and God says they're all wrong. You need to start the church back up. And they started it back up, they began to admit different races and they added to their false doctrines. These churches considered the present day mainline churches to be apostate and taught there was a need for a new church. So they replaced the former churches of Christianity. And today we have a host of a whole new brand new Christian churches. The mega church. There's the Vineyard, Cornerstone, Crossroads, Saddleback Church of Lakefront, California. There's the Southeast Christian Church of Louisville, Kentucky. The Willow Creek Community Church of Winter Springs, Florida. The Lakewood Church of Houston, Texas. The College Park Church in Indianapolis, Indiana, and so forth and so on. Churches with multicultural congregations with a Judeo-Christian theme. Church. Most, if not all of them, have rock and roll bands for the worship service. This music, which came from the beat of African drums of the slaves from Africa, prompted what? The entrance of demonic influence into the nation. Slavery was legal and lawful in many states and was protected by the Constitution and the Bible. Shortly before the War of Northern Aggression, there were movements to pay the slaveholders for their slaves and ship them back to Africa. Marcus Garvey was a black man, a black leader, who was in favor of transporting blacks back to Liberia, Africa. He's a black leader. He was very successful in this movement. Slavery was economically impossible to maintain. But who? The Jewish-influenced abolitionists saw the opportunity to exploit the situation and to do what no other society had ever done. Free the slaves with no monetary payback given to the slaveholder. The Jewish Black Bolle, and I talked about that a couple sermons ago, was formed in order to stop the influence of Marcus Garvey and his movement. Apartheid was basically the law of the nation. What was the phrase? Separate but equal were the words used to describe America during this time. Many elementary, middle, high schools, as well as most colleges and universities, were what? Racially segregated. You had the black schools and the white schools. There were separate drinking fountains and toilets, mainly in the South, and many public facilities. I told you about what Joyce and I found out. We went to Florida. Many went to their own segregated schools. I remember going to Memphis. It was segregated, Memphis. Let me tell you. You walked the sidewalk, they were on the other sidewalk. You went to the movie, they were up in the balcony. Many went to their own segregated schools. The whites lived in one area of town, the blacks in another. They did not live in the same neighborhood. The public schools were targeted after the Supreme Court ruled in the what case? I had a Jewish teacher in high school. She said, she was a Jewish. Her name was Mrs. Fine. Do you have Mrs. Fine? She was something. She'd throw the old knitted ball at you. She said, this case is a very important case in America. I, of course, we didn't care what they're talking about, a political case. But now I know what she meant. It was Brown versus Board of Education, 1954. That was the case. And I was going to school, let's see, I would have been probably a freshman in high school at this time. Well, there was massive resistance against this case. It was staged in the Arkansas National Guard unit blocked the admission of 9 black students in the Central High School in Little Rock, Arkansas. Remember that? This lasted for nearly a month, and it ended when President Eisenhower sent in the United States troops to protect the students. Thus, the integration of the public schools began. What about the armed forces? Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, National Guards were basically a white and didn't become integrated to any degree until really after World War II. There were a few non-whites who fought in the previous wars, but true integration didn't occur without difficulty until the last 60 years. Now we have the situation where who's allowed to fight in the front lines of the military? Women. You got the right. Go out there and fight. Front lines. There's also the problem of sexual harassment. It's become a great epidemic in the armed forces. Then there's the college and university ball teams and the major minor professional leagues soon ended their segregation too. We're not quite old enough to remember the segregation of those teams. I can remember the college and the university. Major League Baseball became integrated in 1947. I was 5 years old when that happened. When Jackie Robinson joined the Brooklyn Dodgers. I looked up the National Football League. It became integrated when 4 players signed the contract. What year? 1946. They were Bill Willis, and I remember Marion Motley of the Cleveland Browns, Kerry Washington, and Woody Strode of the Los Angeles Rams. I have no idea who they were. Then looked up the NBA. Chuck Cooper was the first black player drafted in the NBA. I have no idea who he was. He was drafted in the second round by the Boston Celtics. And there were four other blacks who were drafted in that year. Now blacks have the major number of players on each team, and there's a token number of whites and Asians. That started the integration of other professional sports. So now we have practically everything integrated by law, correct? Public schools, armed forces, major and minor league ball teams, businesses, public transportation, neighborhoods. That's what the urban league was. Golf country clubs, government offices, juries, and most former Christian churches. Here's something that astonished me. The percentage of people who voted for the approval of interracial marriages has shifted drastically in the last 55 years. Whites in the late 1950s had a disapproval rate that was over 90%. They were 90% against interracial marriage 55 years ago. 90% against it. While today, the approval rating is 80%. What? Was 90% against it? And two generations later, it's over 80% for it? No wonder people are against what we're saying. Blacks' approval of black-white marriages was 96%, and now it's almost 100%. So in the United States, today, the approval rating for interracial marriages is 87%. And in 1958, it was 4%. That shocked me. That's our major problem. It's gone from 87% to 4%. Wow. What has caused this dramatic change in a short time, 55 years? It's my lifetime. America started out as what kind of nation? A white nation, yes. Discovered by white people, settled and colonized by white people, governed by white people, with few of any other race or culture living in the land that was given to Joseph as part of the birthright. And it was established as a Christian Republic nation. It's no longer. It's been dead for a long time. And now my conclusion. My question. How did all this change in over 200 years of the nation's existence? How did this happen? What caused the change in race relations? We are now a multicultural democratic country. It was the Roman Catholic Church and the Talmudic Kabbalistic Jew with all their front organizations, such as Knights of Columbus, Knights of Malta, Knights Templar, Freemasonry, Round Table Group, Trilateral Commission, Bilderbergers, the Golden Dawn, the B'nai B'rith, the Jesuits, and on and on. Now, I'm going to read a scripture. It's Exodus chapter 12, verse 43. It says, And the Lord said unto Moses and Aaron, this is the ordinance of the Passover. What's the ordinance of the Passover? There shall no stranger eat of it. Well, the stranger, there's three different words that's translated from stranger? This is a foreigner, one of another race. Nobody of another race could eat the Passover with Israel. This verse instructs the Israelites that the Passover meal is not what? Universal. It's not Catholic. But it's limited to only members of their race. No blacks, no Asians, no Filipinos, no Asians, no Native Americans, no Mexicans, no mulattoes, no Jews, no stranger, no foreigner of another race shall eat the Passover meal. Let me ask you a question. Are we not being consistent to the Holy Scriptures if we say the very same thing about? There is the popular and main doctrine of most Christian churches in this present time. What's the most popular doctrine? God is the Father of each and every person on the earth, and all men are brothers. There's only one race, the human race. The fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man are fundamental teachings of Freemasonry. These phrases are often carved in the stonework of Masonic temples. Almost every town in America and almost every country of the world, you will find a Freemasonic temple. Think that is a problem? The covenant doctrine of the Holy Bible is very seldom even understood by the vast number of so-called Christians. Why? Because most Christians do not read and study their Bibles, and the ones that do read new translations that are full of mistranslations and interpretations. Christians are so full of chemicals and pharmakia that these additives no doubt affect their reasoning and apathy of the people. America started out a Calvinist Protestant nation. They now became an Arminian. Very few have ever heard of the covenant position. The Calvinistic position least held that Jesus Christ did not die for all people. They taught that he only died for the elect. Then he struck down the main Christian doctrines. Christianity was being put to sleep. There can be little doubt that America was established according to prophecy to be the homeland of God's regathered Israel. We became, for a very short time, the city on a hill. The light that shone around the world, the mountain of God's holiness. We also became the number one target for the enemies of God. God blessed us with the table and the sight and presence of our enemies in spite of what they did. They could not only take away our joy, our prosperity, and our blessing. They debauched our money. They put us in wars. They busted our paper finances. They got us to do what? Serve other gods. Thereby, according to the covenant, making our God punish us. Think God's punished America? Think God's cursed? Oh, yes, he is. Why? We're not serving him. We have been what? Deceived. The whole world out there is full of deceivement. We're under a curse for serving other gods. Christians in the past have suffered worse things than we have suffered. They kept the faith even till they were killed. May our God give us the faith that will keep us serving the God that brought our kinsmen out of slavery in Egypt. Blessed be the Lord God of Israel. Amen.